first of all, he's a great person. I feel like he's a great talent evaluator. He did great things for us down in New Orleans. I knew it was only a matter of time before he got his opportunity to be a general manager somewhere. I feel like Chicago is lucky to have him. And you know, as far as you know, the decision on Trubisky, only time will tell, right? You know,
it's yeah.
not something you can evaluate now or even a year from now. I mean, that's something that, you know, obviously takes time as you're beginning to build your team.
Bears fans, this is Bears Barroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and that was New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees talking about Chicago Bears GM Ryan Pace. Thanks to WSCR Radio and the Mully and Hanley Show for that clip. You can listen to those guys Monday through Friday on 670 AM. And I thought it was an appropriate way to start the show with that clip because we're going to talk about the 90-man roster that Ryan Pace has put together for his head coach, John Fox. With me tonight to talk about that topic and anything else that pops up are two very busy guys, so I am indebted to them for clearing 90 minutes to talk Bears football. First off with us is Danny Schimmann, our Bears Barroom scouting analyst. He also is a scouting assistant for InsideTheLeague.com and an NFL draft columnist for National Football Post. And also with us is my man, El Hombre, Jose Cotto, our senior analyst for all things Bears. Welcome, fellas, and I want to begin by getting your input on the signing of Victor Cruz. The details on the contract have been released. It's just a one-year deal, fully guaranteed, $2 million. You guys were not with us last week where we devoted a good portion of the show to discussing Cruz's arrival with the Bears, but I want to get your impact, and then after that, we'll touch on some of the position groups that you guys that interest you guys the most. Both of you guys are prolific scouting analysts, so I want to get your input on what positions look strong for the Bears, what are areas of concern. So let me start with you, Jose, and get your input on the Victor Cruz signing.
We signed a Puerto Rican. I mean, how do I not like it?
One more and we'll have a gang.
Hey, there was the fullback that they drafted out of Temple, and I don't think they've had another one since, right?
Yeah,
the kid,
Evan Rodriguez.
Rodriguez, yeah.
Yeah, the one that couldn't stay out of lockup. Yeah. He was always drinking and driving and giving us a great name, just like that tight end in New England. It's just fucking awesome, isn't it? So let's hope Victor Cruz can stay out of the clink. But I mean, it's a lot like the rest of the signings at that position during the course of this offseason. It comes with a lot of question marks. But it's a player that has been productive in this league, and you just hope that you recapture that ability and that he can be that productive for you. I like the signing. I mean, it's low risk, high reward, but I can't get too excited about it. I mean, it's not like they went and it's not like retaining Alshon Jeffrey. It doesn't make up for losing a player like that. But it is a positive move, adding a veteran and a player that's done it in this league. But he comes with the injury questions, and he also comes with some off the field questions. I mean, he seems like a great character, but I follow him on social media, and he seems to dabble in a lot of different things. And even when he was injured and he was rehabbing, you know, he was spending time on the road at fashion shows, and there was even some dirty laundry that was aired out by some women. I guess he likes to get around. Typical Puerto Rican. I can't knock him for that specifically, but the fashion shows and all that, when really he should have been devoting more time and been seen less, devoted more time to the football team and to rehabbing, getting back on the field. He was also one of the players that was involved in that infamous boat that apparently had a lot of women and cocaine on it before the Giants playoff game where they really didn't show up against Green Bay. So just things to think about. But I mean, if he's three quarters of the player that he was when he had those 1,000-yard seasons, he's going to be a great addition here. I mean, he understands how to run routes. He understands how to get open. He understands NFL coverages. And these are all positives for what is a young receiving core.
It is a curious signing, given that Pace and Fox have made it known that they want guys who are just totally into football, and their outside interest should be football. Well, this guy is far from that. I mean, he's hosting a reality show on MTV. He's got the fashion thing. He's got the back history, like all the stuff Jose just mentioned. So it just seems really bizarre that that the Bears decided to sign him, but it is a one-year deal. Danny, this is your first time on a Bears Barroom podcast, correct?
That is correct, sir.
So that means that we're going to pop your cherry tonight. I wish I had a
We'll use lube.
I appreciate the kind gesture.
There you go. So, Danny, what do you think about the signing of Cruz?
Well, my initial thought was, meh. I mean, really, what's he going to do? Because I thought the Bears were going to go younger at the right receiver. But thinking about just how young they are in that receiver room, I mean, I think he brings, you know, some leadership, a veteran that the younger guys can go to, especially if, you know, someone like Kendall Wright, because I thought Wright was going to pretty much be in that slot receiver role, but maybe he can just bounce off some ideas from Cruz. And like Jose said, if he can give us, you know, 50 catches, you know, 600 yards, 3 or 4 touchdowns, it's something that, you know, it's a positive as opposed to negative. So, wasn't really over the top excited, but I don't think anything negative can come out of it. Definitely, like I said, adding a veteran to that room that's going to be predominantly young, from what we could tell as of right now, I think will be positive for the entire receiving group.
Yeah, Cruz talked to the media earlier this week, and this is what he said about his the leadership role that he's inherited with the Bears.
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. I understood that coming in. I kind of, you know, in the NFL, you kind of just fall into this leadership category. You know, after a certain number of years, it's like, all right, you're the veteran. You're like, well, what? Like, I just got here. Like, but I think I've folded into that mold very well. I think it's natural for me, and I think, you know, I'm excited to help these younger guys get better and watch them grow.
Well, he's definitely articulate. He knows football well. He runs good routes. So there's a lot that he can teach these guys, you know. But perhaps the concern is he going to, you know, do what John Fox doesn't want any of his players to do, which is, you know, show so much interest in outside things that will distract this team. That's kind of the concern, and that's what you were talking about, right, Jose?
Right, absolutely. You know, I think one underrated part about this signing is the fact that he's come back from these injuries, and with Kevin White and Marcus Wheaton being injury prone guys, and now Cam Meredith is dinged up, you got this trio of Snack, Crackle, and Pop as your receivers, and you got a guy who's very familiar with the training room, and he can get those guys through that mentally. Maybe that's part of the thinking here.
My concern though is will he take away a roster spot from a young kid? So because, for example, like right now the Bears have 11 receivers on their roster currently, and last year when they broke camp they kept 6 receivers. So if you look at it right now with Cruz's contract, he's got $2 million guaranteed for next year. So I'm assuming he's on the team. So right now you have Kendall Wright, Kevin White, Marcus Wheaton, Cameron Meredith, and Victor Cruz. So that's 5. So you're gonna have guys like Josh Bellamy, Daniel Braverman, Titus Davis, everyone's favorite, you know, free agent receiver Tanner Gentry, Ruben Randall, and Deontay Thompson all battling for one roster spot. And I think that might come down to special teams, and I'll be a battle between Josh Bellamy and his coverage ability or Deontay Thompson and his return ability. So I would hate to lose a kid, maybe like a Braverman, maybe a Titus Davis, to, you know, to a roster spot for one of those guys to keep Victor Cruz. So,
well, it's tough, especially if he doesn't stay healthy. You know, it would have the feel of that Eddie Royal signing where you brought him in and you let go of receivers that were more available and probably just as talented during the course of that receiver's tenure. And unfortunately, he couldn't stay on the field. So you'd hate to see that with Cruz. The key is, if he's going to push a young receiver off the roster who's a talented player that could contribute here for the next few seasons, then, I mean, he has to stay healthy. He has to be available.
But, guys, you know, everyone that Danny mentioned is a prime candidate, with the exception of Thompson, who doesn't have any more practice squad eligibility left. Everyone else is a prime candidate for the practice squad. Braverman will be lucky to make the 53. He's going to be a practice squad kid. Tanner Gentry, the same thing. None of these guys are going to bust out. Braverman in his second year, and Gentry in his, Titus Davis as rookies. I just don't see it. I think these are developmental players who 2 or 3 years into the league start to perhaps make an impact. You know, it's not like these are second, third round draft picks that we should be concerned about.
No, you're right. But and the only thing is, you know, special teams is a big part of you know this team, and especially a team that, you know, is in transition offensively.
Yeah.
So if you lose a guy like Bellamy in his coverage ability, or you know maybe Thompson in his return ability, for a guy like Victor Cruz, again, you know, assuming he's healthy and everything, you know, works out well, he should be a contributor. But I just would hate to see, you know, to lose a roster spot for an aging veteran when you have some young kids that you can try and develop. But you know, yeah. your point is exactly right. As far as the other kids are concerned, yeah, they're all practice squad eligible, and they all could very well, you know, go through waivers and be signed back onto the practice squad.
I feel like you could make up that roster spot elsewhere in terms of keeping, if you're keeping Bellamy, you're not keeping him because he's going to contribute as a receiver. We've seen what That's he correct. Can do there. Right. I mean, you can argue till you're blue in the face, well, he got open. Well, I don't give a shit how many times he gets open. He drops the fucking football. I mean, that logic that I've heard so much and so often from some of the fans on Twitter, I mean, with, well, he gets open. I mean, who cares? There are other receivers on this roster that can get open and catch the football. You can make that up elsewhere. And I mean, although he does make those tackles downfield on kick coverage, I mean, he had his warts on those units as well. I mean, I went to the New York Giants game, and there was a key play where the Giants punt returner, Harris, muffed a punt. The ball literally bounced up right into Josh Bellamy's vicinity. He overran it because he can't catch a ball. I mean, you can make this up by keeping an additional defensive back where you have a lot of question marks as well. I mean, you can keep one of these players that is going to contribute on the defensive side of the football and on special teams as well. I'd hate to see them waste a roster spot on just a special teamer such as a Sherrick McManus or a Josh Bellamy. I think that's overrated at this point with the number of kickoff returns diminishing. And I mean, it's just not as important as it once was. I can't see justifying a roster spot when you need so much help on the offensive side of the football and the defensive side of the football on this 3-win team. I don't want to see them keeping these specialists. You're already keeping a long snapper who's not going to contribute in any other facet of the game.
Yeah, I think you make a valid point there, although this team is going to punt a lot this season. So yeah. So you do need guys who can make the necessary tackle. And you're right about Josh. Josh gets a lot of accolades for his special teams play, but he is – you know, I almost see him as a little bit of a head case in that if he's not totally concentrating on what's going on, he's just liable to make easy or stupid mistakes. You know, he's 28 years old, only been in the league now 3-4 years. I agree. I wouldn't worry too much if we lost this guy, but at the same time, I think, you know, we still have to pay some attention to special teams because we are going to be utilizing it a little bit more than maybe other teams in the division. I wanted to talk a little bit also about staying with this position group, Kevin White. He's back from this mysterious one-day sit-down thing. I'm not even sure what the excuse was for why he sat a day out of practice, and the media got into an uproar about is he really hurt and so forth, given that the Bears have been less than honest about his injury and other issues. But White did practice, and he looks healthy. And this is what he told the reporters about where he's at in his career.
Got to happen now. Got to turn it up. You know, even year one, year two, I always want to turn it up and show what I can do. So for me, year three is just, it's time. If you say I won't be at a score 100, I mean a touchdown or get 100 yards in the game, that don't affect how I'm going to play. I just know I got to turn it up, and do what I got to do.
Danny, you scouted him in college, and you've seen him play a handful of games with the Bears. What's your assessment on him?
Well, my only thing with Kevin White is I wish he would stay healthy. I mean, it's really unfair to label him a bust or to even have an opinion upon him as far as an NFL player is concerned. And you know, coming out of West Virginia, you know, the biggest knock on him was, you know, he hasn't run a full route tree. You know, it'll take time for him to adjust. Well, unfortunately, with all these injuries, he hasn't had time to go out there and get the experience to learn to run a full route tree. So not only is he, you know, coming back from injury, now he also has got to, you know, catch up in terms of mentally as far as, you know, learning the position and learn to play the position well. The encouraging thing was before he got hurt last year, he was starting to develop. He started to see some signs of him, you know, breaking out, you know, wanting the ball. I like to see a receiver, especially a young receiver, when he catches the ball, turn around and make the defense, look at the defensive back and let him know, hey, yeah, I just caught the ball on you. That shows me that the kid's got confidence. He's got some moxie. And he did that a lot of that at West Virginia. I mean, you know, he would just turn around and go off on the cornerback. So I would like to see him stay healthy and develop. And then before we pass judgment on him. So obviously, like he just said in that soundbite, this is a very important year for Kevin White.
Jose, what do you think about Kevin White's prospects for having a good season this year? We can't speculate on whether he's going to be injured or not. You know, we can only pray on that one. But based on the development that you saw in 2016, do you have hopes that he can be a 60, 70-plus catcher this year?
It's hard to answer that. I mean, that soundbite, it sounds to me like that's a guy that's hearing all of the outside noise, which is not a good thing. And when Kevin White was on the field for those handful of games, that was not the same Kevin White that I saw on tape at West Virginia. The Kevin White that I saw on tape at West Virginia, although he ran the limited route tree, when they got the football in his hands, he was special after the catch. And in the NFL so far, I mean, this is a guy that on a number of his receptions in the NFL, he's gone straight to the ground. He's not picking up those yards after the catch. He's not becoming that ferocious running back that we saw at West Virginia when he got the ball in his hands. So that's something that worries me. As far as, I mean, yes, he probably could catch 60 or 70 balls if he's healthy for an entire season, but that isn't necessarily a big positive. I mean, it could just be an indictment on this regime, and they're running him out there even if he's not exactly ready, or if he's not, let's say, the second best receiver on the roster. Yeah, so that worries me. I mean, I don't want the offense force-feeding the ball through Kevin White because Ryan Pace wants to be right on his first draft pick. I want this kid to have to earn it. And so far, I mean, what we've seen out of him, there was one encouraging game, and then he was injured again. So, you know, he at this point, he's got to shut up and just show us that he is the receiver that they drafted and he is the player that they saw on tape at West Virginia. There was a lot to like about him coming out of West Virginia, but he was very raw and there was a lot for him to learn. And it seems like he hasn't picked those things up and he played very slow. And you have to wonder if those injuries have taken a toll or if he's playing slow because mentally he's just swimming out there and he's overthinking everything.
And that's what I think it is. Go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, and so I just want to see it all come together as a person that roots for the Chicago Bears, but I'm not going to hold my breath, honestly. You know, from what I've seen so far, it's very discouraging, but I hope that this player pans out, especially when you've let Alshon Jeffrey walk. I know I keep going back to that, and, you know, everybody, a lot of the fans are, you know, they're done with Alshon because he signed elsewhere, but that was a productive player that you had in-house, and you let him walk. So now the players that you chose to retain and this player that you chose to spend your first ever draft pick as a general manager on has to come through for you.
Yeah, I think to your point, Jose, yes, you're right. I think he was overthinking the game. I think he was playing slow, not up to his capabilities, what you and I both saw at, you know, at West Virginia on his tape. And I think that was part of the problem. And then, you know, on top of it, you know, he's got the injuries. He's probably coming back from that, trying to get some, you know, some confidence in that leg. And then next thing you know, boom, he goes down again. So I think, you know, I think it, you know, he was playing slow. And that's not the Kevin White I saw on tape. That's not the Kevin White you saw on tape. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact he was just still trying to comprehend and trying to learn the offense and just trying to, you know, play fast, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's hurt again. So, but are you ready to call him a bust?
No, not yet. I don't think we've seen enough NFL games to deem him a bust. Now, if he gets injured again, I mean, then you have to say, well, this guy is a bust because he just could never get on the field. I mean, which has been the case for several Chicago Bears draft picks. I mean, there were several selections in the Jerry Angelo era that never saw the field because they were injured.
Right, right. So. Well, if he gets hurt again, then he becomes the Bears version of Derrick Rose.
Yeah, right. They should have never taken him out of the wrapper.
Well, and there are some medical specialists who almost predicted that Kevin White was going to suffer another injury, because when you have that kind of injury that he first had, the broken fibula, this typically when you're coming back, there's so much stress put on other parts of that leg that it's you typically for athletes who put a lot of torque and stress on that part of the body part, that it's typical that there will be re-injury issues. So the key thing now is to see that now that he has suffered this re-injury, hopefully he's gone through rehabilitation and really strengthened up that leg so that there aren't any more problems moving forward. But yes, if he has other issues with that leg this year, then he's definitely a bust, and not because of his talent or not because of anything else, but it will be just because physically he just had the misfortune of suffering that first injury. The other thing about White and what we heard some whispers last year was that he wasn't doing a great job of studying the playbook, and you know, we talked about his knowledge of the route tree being less than 100% of college, which most 99% of the receivers coming out of college have that issue. But there was some talk about him, perhaps he should have worked a little bit harder on the playbook and so forth. And I think we saw some of that in his early play with that tentativeness. And to Jose's point, you know, maybe also thinking about the injury. So one more question about the wide receiver group before we move on. Do you guys, with these veteran acquisitions, I think it's pretty obvious that Cruz will make the team, although disagree with me if I'm wrong. But out of these other guys, Marcus Wheaton, Kendall Wright, Reuben Randall, who was signed towards the late part of 2016. Out of these old veteran guys, are you expecting anything special out of those guys? Let me start with Danny.
The one of them that you mentioned is Kendall Wright. He's, you know, he came off a when last time he was with, when Donald Loggins was the offensive coordinator back in Tennessee, he had a pretty productive season in terms of catches and receptions. So that's one guy, and that's why the Cruz signing kind of baffles me a little bit, because I assumed he was going to be in that slot role. With, you know, flanked outside by Meredith and White or Wheaton or whatever combination. So I look forward to seeing him, and you know, he's on a 1 year, like most of these guys are, 1 year prove a deal. So him and Wheaton are the two guys that I expect to make the team. Like I said, Wheaton, White, Wright, Meredith, and Cruz are right now my five receivers, you know, coming into camp. So that's the one guy I've earmarked is Kendall Wright. I think he should have, or could have, a pretty big productive season for the Bears this year.
Wright is one of the players that I was excited about when they brought him in, just because of his potential. I mean, looking at the crop, the players that they signed, and looking at the free agent crop, he was one player that has been productive, and he's a player that could move the chains, and that's something that was lacking in this offense. So I was excited about him coming in, but there are questions with him. You know, there were things that came out of Tennessee with him being suspended, being late to meetings, and being seen as somewhat of a diva by the coaching staff. I mean, I think there were several games where he was deactivated, and he was probably one of the most talented receivers on their roster. I mean, when you look at that team's receiving core, they didn't have much. I mean, they went out and spent the fifth overall selection this past draft on Corey Davis. So, I mean, that's an indictment on what they had there. They felt that it was a need. But, I mean, as far as what I expect out of this group, I don't expect much. I mean, they come with a lot of questions. They could surprise me. The Marcus Wheaton signing to me was baffling. Marcus Wheaton is a player that really hasn't lived up to his potential. And now you're locking him into this roster because he has $6 million guaranteed. Are you going to cut that off the roster for the first year? I mean, it's like the Alan Ball situation where, you know, you gave him $3 million guaranteed, and then the fourth preseason game, he's running as the fourth or fifth string cornerback because he's not playing well. And then ultimately, after that first season, you end up cutting him. But you committed this money to him, and who were you bidding against? That's what I'm curious about with Marcus Wheaton. So I don't expect much from him. You know, ideally, he at least threatens the safeties because he has the ability to get vertical. He does have some speed, and he opens things up underneath for the tight ends and for, you know, Kendall Wright or Victor Cruz, whoever it may be. With Cruz, I think he's a lock to make the roster because of the guaranteed money, unless, you know, there's some clauses in there where if he gets injured, you know, there's an injury settlement. I'm not sure how the contract is structured exactly, but he's obviously a player that can play outside. I mean, you saw the Giants move Odell Beckham around quite a bit. They played him in the slot, and Cruz took quite a few snaps on the outside, so he can play there. I mean, although when he had his huge, most productive seasons, he played primarily out of the slot. I mean, he's a player that you can move around. I think with him being a veteran, you can expect that versatility, and he is going to make the roster. Obviously, Kevin White is a player that would be a lock. Cam Meredith is a lock, and then you're battling to see whether or not you're keeping five or six, and who the fifth or the sixth receivers are. I mean, to me, that's up for grabs in the preseason. We'll see how that shakes out. We'll see whether or not they prioritize a receiver that can contribute to the offense, or if they're looking to fill that special teams role. But like I said earlier, I mean, they could just go five wide and go ahead and keep an additional defensive back to make up for that special teams coverage that they're looking for.
I mean, we're used to seeing Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, you know, go up and get the ball. I mean, besides Kevin White and Cameron Meredith, I don't think anyone else is 6 feet taller than 6 feet on this roster. So they're looking for more of these faster, quicker, you know, short area burst kind of guys where they can, like Jose said, get open real quick, dump the ball off, you know, pick up, you know, move the chains, pick up, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards at a time. So unless they're going to go with their tight ends, and then, you know, that's another position we can talk about later on. They got some bigger bodies there, some guys that can go up and get the ball. But that's a little bit of a different change of feel for the Bears receiver group, you know, that we've accustomed to seeing the last couple of seasons that probably won't be available this year.
Yeah, and I mean, it plays to what the Bears did last season. It was, their passing game was short to intermediate, and they would abandon the run. That's what they do.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on your thinking there, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if Ryan Pace picked up another wide receiver when future cuts come about. There's an article on spotrac.com about players who are on the bubble, and when you look at their wide receiver list, there's guys like Jeremy Maclin, Eric Decker. I'm not quite sure that Pace would want to bring in another veteran like that, given that he's already brought in a Victor Cruz. But guys maybe like Jordan Matthews, who could see limited snaps because of the acquisitions of Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith. Jordan Matthews is on the bubble and maybe a trade candidate. Maybe the Bears can work out a trade for one of their players that we're always talking about, maybe trading. I don't know if they need a tight end like Zach Miller. But Jordan Matthews wouldn't be a guy I wouldn't mind seeing on the roster. He's got some potential. Bottom line is, this is a weak area of the team. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of ifs, and the acquisitions that Ryan Pace made during the offseason are all veterans with who have a recent history of failure, not success. So this is a position group to keep an eye on. There probably will be some tinkering by Ryan Pace. But I think we all agree that this is a position of concern. Danny, I'm going to turn it over to you and ask you, what position do you want to talk about now?
Well, in terms of a position that I have some questions on, you know, the defensive back position, I know they went and signed, you know, a number of cornerbacks and, you know, a safety in free agency, and also drafted a safety in Eddie Jackson. But I still think that that's a position that's, especially cornerback, is a position that's in flux. And I think Prince Amukamara and Marcus Cooper are going to start off as the starters, and they're going to probably be backed up by Bryce Callahan and Craven LeBlanc. But in, as far as you know, depth on that cornerback spot, I still think that they are lacking players back there. And now, again, if their front seven is as good as we think or anticipate it's going to be, and they're causing pressure on bringing pressure on the quarterback, you don't need all world corners back there. But that's still an area that concerns me right now, is going into training camp, is that cornerback position.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm looking at the Bears roster on ChicagoBears.com. And
there's 118 defensive backs.
Well, yeah.
But are any of them good?
I'm trying to calculate it right now. And, man, my goodness, let me see what I come up with here, because I don't have the boy wonder, Lauren Cox, to give me the answer. But I'm coming up with 16. There's 16 defensive backs on this roster right now. So they've definitely taken a shotgun approach to addressing the needs there. Now, there are some people on this roster who I do have some hope in, but some of the guys also I think are a year or two away. For instance, Eddie Jackson, I think he's a prime candidate to, have a mysterious injury during the season, and this will be a redshirt season for him, despite the fact that he's 24, and there's high expectations for him, given the fact that he's coming off two major injuries in college football season. Maybe it's a good idea to have him watch during his first season, get totally healthy, and let some of these other players play for a position. But there are some intriguing names in this defensive backfield that I think could find a home. We've talked about DeAndre Hall in the past. I'm excited about seeing him play that safety position. I don't know. What do you think, Jose? Are you worried about this defensive back corner, especially cornerback position? Well, cornerback, safety, both areas, right? Are you worried?
I think Ryan Pace is worried. We've seen a trend. This is the second consecutive year where they throw a shit ton of bodies at these two positions. They did it last season. They opened the season with, 12 defensive backs on the roster?
Yeah, I think it was.
And they had, I think it was 4 on the practice squad. They did the same thing with the tight end position. They threw a bunch of bodies at it, and they had a tight end on the practice squad. It seems to me like whenever he's worried about a position, he just throws a bunch of people at it, and he's throwing shit against the wall and seeing what sticks and seeing if any of them pan out, seeing if anybody separates themselves, and then he can look like a genius. So I don't think that he's all that confident in this position. I mean, this is the second year in a row. So last year he threw all these bodies at it. He drafted several with the hopes that some of them pan out, and now he's added even more. Now, the same thing you're seeing with that wide receiver group. I mean, you got a bunch of receivers, and he's just praying that 4 of these guys can be halfway decent, can be productive, and that 5 or 6 can just be complementary players, bottom of the roster players that contribute in other ways. And so as far as, my feelings on these players, yeah, there are some players here with potential, but that's been the story with any position that they've thrown a bunch of numbers at. You got a couple guys where you say, this guy might have some potential. You look at the tight end position, and they picked up Michael Pruitt last year. Stashed him for a bit and then played him later in the season. That's a player that you looked at and you said, well, he has some physical tools, he had some potential, but he didn't really do anything with that opportunity. And so I think you're going to see the same here. I mean, it could be a bunch of nothing, and you could be in the same position next year, or you could have a couple of guys pan out. There is obviously potential at that position, but like I said, I mean, I think any fan base looks at their roster and they see the roster with these rose-colored glasses, and they're only seeing the positive and the good that could come of having this player on the roster. They can only see that player's strengths, and, well, you never know. But, you could say that you never know thing about any player on this roster.
Yep.
I mean, it's not pretty. You look at this group, and there's a couple of players that have some potential, but there isn't one guy back there where you say, this is our stud. We have this one, at least – we don't know what else we have, but we have this one player that we know is going to show up every Sunday. He's going to lay the wood. He's going to take the football away. He's going to impact the game one way or the other. You don't have that in this group. You hope that one of these guys emerges, but you're crossing your fingers the same way that you did last season. I like Marcus Cooper. I like the signing. But this is a young player who's on his third team. This is a local kid who I'm familiar with. I love the physical traits and the athleticism, But he comes with a lot of question marks. You know, they gave him this 3-year deal, and you're praying that he plays up to his potential and that he's the guy that had that 2 or 3 game stretch where I believe he had, you know, 4 interceptions. He scored a couple of touchdowns, had, you know, over 10 tackles in that stretch for Arizona when they picked him up from Kansas City. You know, you hope that you can get that type of production out of him for the course of, you know, the duration of this contract, but you may not. And then you have, you know, Amukamara, who's a solid player. He's a guy that can take away a number 2 receiver, but he comes with the injury questions, the same as, you know, some of these players at their wide receiver position. Kyle Fuller, you know, who's Kyle Fuller at this point?
That's the guy we haven't talked about. That's the guy, obviously, this is a make or break year. They didn't pick up his option, but that's the guy that can really, if he is what they thought he was, I mean, that can really solidify that this cornerback position, I think, or help solidify the cornerback position.
Right. Last season, you draft Deion Bush, you give him those snaps. He looked lost back there. I mean, who is Deion Bush? I mean, we don't know. There's so many question marks at this position. DeAndre Hall, I'm very excited about him changing positions. I think he has that length, and he will have range back there. He seems to have instincts. He didn't catch the football as a cornerback, but he made a lot of plays on the football. He knocked a lot of balls down. So I'm excited about him using that length to match up with tight ends and slot receivers. That often gives you some versatility in terms of the coverages and the defenses that you can run. But again, it's a position change, and it's a question mark. So, you know, it's wait and see, the same as the receivers. You hope and pray. But, you know, more than likely, this is going to be a team that's mediocre or worse, and you got to kind of get through it and hope that they can solidify these positions down the line. I mean, one thing I have to give Ryan Pace is that there are some positions that were weak that he has turned into strengths, such as the inside linebacker position. I mean, the inside linebackers that first season were Shea McClellan and Christian Jones. They cut Mason Foster, who's gone on to be productive for the Redskins. I mean, I thought that was a mistake, but that position is now a strength. The interior of the offensive line is now a strength, when there were a lot of question marks around that position even last year this time. So hopefully he can work some of that magic at some of these positions, but you do have to be a little bit concerned that he lets talent walk, and then you're throwing numbers at positions such as the, you know, you've lost Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey since John Fox has joined this team, and now you have a bunch of question marks at receiver. So you took a strength, and it's now a weakness. The tight end position, you had one of the best, most talented tight ends in the NFL who was a head case. You got rid of him, and you know, you ended up with a lot of question marks there, and now you're paying, you know, Deion Sims $10 million, and you spent a second-round pick on a tight end. So, you know, there's some good and some bad with Pace. So I'm going to try to be patient with him and not be as critical as I normally would be, but there's a lot to be concerned about, you know, with this team. This isn't a pretty roster. I mean, Bryce Callahan's a player that flashed. I mean, you love it when you can get an undrafted free agent and he gives you meaningful snaps. I mean, you think back to the Detroit game last year, that I believe was the first Detroit game where Bryce Callahan completely shut Golden Tate down. I mean, he looked dominant. He made plays on the football, but then he's injured and he can't stay on the field. And there's just so much of that on this roster. It can be really frustrating.
Danny, you mentioned Kyle Fuller. You think he's on the roster to compete for a spot, or you think he's trade bait?
Well, from what all this, if you read all the tea leaves, all the signs, you know, that are coming off from Hallis Hall, it doesn't look like they have much confidence in him. That this coaching staff, this regime doesn't have much confidence in him. You know, he wasn't their first round pick. He, you know, so that the whole thing last year, we're getting a knee scope and then missing the whole year was bizarre, to say the least. So, as of right now, if I had to put money on it, I'd say Fuller does not make the opening day roster. But as I was talking to Jose, is like, this kid he's talented. He's got talent. So, you know, if he's healthy and if he's committed, you know, and if he comes into training camp with his head on straight and he goes in looking to win a position, I think he can make an impact in the secondary for the Bears. And like Jose was just saying, you know, there's a bunch of guys here, you know, a lot of bodies, but we need players. They need players. They need impact players. So, you know, Fuller, well, I think at least he'll be given an opportunity coming into camp. But if I had to bet my money on it right now, I don't think he makes the team.
The Bears release Kyle Fuller. It's a $3 million plus hit that they they just lose that money. There's no cap savings. So trading him, there is a savings of $1.7 million. So I'm sure they're trying to find a trade partner, and I think Kyle Fuller would love to play for another team. But if it doesn't happen by the start of training camp or mid-training camp, then, yeah, they really have to give this guy a shot to make the team, because I totally agree with you, Danny. This guy is super talented. We saw him progress under Vic Fangio's system. He had difficulty in the beginning because that's really not – that defense is not his strength. But we saw him progress, and he started to play better. So he's got talent. So I hope it's a happy ending one way or another. We get either something good back in a trade or he plays to his potential.
He's one of the most talented players at the position on the roster. And, I mean, what he is what you brought in. I mean, Marcus Cooper is a player that you've seen flashes in the NFL, and you hope to, you know, project that over the course of the season, that he remains that productive. And Kyle Fuller has shown flashes, and he's a young player who has all the talent in the world. So you got to give him an opportunity. If you're willing to bring these other players in and give them an opportunity – I understand that there may be some bitter feelings with the injury and them possibly feeling like he could have given it a go last season and he quit on the team and to protect himself and protect his body. But, you know, new year, you need productive football players. Forget about your feelings and your emotions. I mean, I want the players out there that are going to help me win football games. You can put that type of thing behind you.
Let's think about Fuller is, you know, the rumors were, you know, his dedication. The coaching staff was questioning his dedication. Does he love the game? You know, does he put in the time and the effort to, you know, to learn the playbook? So, you know, if he's gotten over that hump, if he's, you know, gotten, you know, more professional, if you will, I think, like, you know, I think he has a chance to make this team. Obviously, you know, it's not like it's a stacked team back there, you know, as we discussed. But, you know, I just don't know if this coaching staff will give him an opportunity. But, you know.
Yeah, I don't think so. Danny, honestly, I don't think so. And it would be unfortunate, because then it's more of a personal decision than, you know, a business decision where you're in the business of winning football games.
Right.
It is strange with this coaching staff that they seem to have, they seem to have grudges with certain players. You know, we talked, I think, a show or two ago about Harold Jones Corte and how quickly he would land in the doghouse. And it was always because he was hyper-aggressive. It wasn't because he was loafing on the field. And now with Kyle Fuller refusing to suit up at the end of the year, Vic Fangio in his press conference publicly kind of, you know, it was pretty obvious what he was doing. He was basically saying, Kyle doesn't want to play. And that's sort of landed Kyle in the doghouse. So, you know, in many respects, I like the defensive coordinator on this football team and his coaches, but at the same time, it's kind of weird how he treats some of the players. All right, let's move on. I want to get Jose's pick on a position group and kind of give me your analysis on whether you're feeling confident or focus on a particular player and whether you think he's a goner or could turn into a diamond in the rough.
Well, I'll start with a position group, and I'll try to be more positive because I'm fucking bummed now. I don't even know. I'm not even looking forward to training camp now.
Well, let me.
We already lost training camp. We lost the preseason game while we recorded this podcast.
let me tell you that when you were talking about the defensive back group and you said we don't have a stud, a superstar back there, I started thinking about my boy Jamal Adams, who I wanted to draft, and I started to cry.
He's already impressing everybody in OTAs. I know it's OTAs, but he's already just some, you know, stuff coming out of Jets camp about Jamal Adams. That's one guy I was high on as well.
Danny and I were in the same boat. We wanted Jamal Adams here. Anyway, go ahead, Jose.
But now we got a quarterback that likes kissing titties. I'm cool. I don't go with.
He's gonna look good carrying that clipboard too.
Yeah. So he's gonna have a clipboard with a fucking nudie magazine on, and he's not gonna be learning the playbook.
Big Jugs magazine.
He'll have the Cade McNown
clipboard. Yeah, really.
So, I'm going to go with the defensive line. I feel like this was an area of weakness last season, and I feel like Pace did a good job of bringing some quality players here that should help to make this a very stout front. I mean, you already had Akeem Hicks, hopefully a healthy Eddie Goldman, and Jonathan Bullard taking that next step, hopefully. And bringing in Jay Howard and John Jenkins, to me, those are big signings. Those are positives that should help your run defense. And hopefully, I mean, this goes back to what you were saying, Aldo, about the strange treatment of, you know, some of the players from Vic Fangio. He just seems to fall in love with, like, just he fell in love with Shea McClellan. Now it's like, it's Mitch Unrein. It's Chris Pruszynski. Chris Pruszynski could fucking suck for 3 weeks straight. Chris Pruszynski, I was going to mention that with these defensive backs. Which good player, which ascending player does Chris Pruszynski push off the roster for no good fucking reason? And I'd hate to see Mitch Unrein do the same. It's like Vic Fangio has to have a couple token white guys on his side of the ball. I don't get it. But if you look at they should be keeping five or six. You know, I think they kept five last season. But the ones that I'm looking at, really, that I think should be a really good rotation, Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman. Eddie Goldman can push out to the five tech. In certain packages, you can bring John Jenkins in as a nose, Jay Howard, Jonathan Bullard, and then, of course, our big guy there that was on injured reserve, Roy Robertson Harris, who has all the athleticism and, you know, is a project like Cornelius Washington, but he could become a player. So I'm excited about that position group. I think they made some strides in upgrading that unit, and the run defense should be a lot better for it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Jose, because that is, as I look at the roster and I hear what you're saying, that is a position group that has some promise. Danny, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Jose. That's one that D line is a group as a whole. I'm very, especially with the Jay Howard pickup. Hopefully he's healthy, but if he is, I mean, that front three with Howard, Hicks, and Goldman, I think will be rock solid. As far as Harris is concerned, I believe, Jose, they moved him out to outside linebacker, if I'm not mistaken.
They pushed him back out again?
They pushed him back out again. But I mean, he's versatile enough where he could play with his hand in the ground, or, you know, step outside as far as a situational pass rusher. But yeah, to go back to your point, I mean, last year they kept six. So I mean, right now, if you think about it, you know, the three mentioned, Goldman, Hicks, and Howard, I'm assuming are going to be your starters. All reliable. Mitch Unrein will be your fourth guy, and then Jonathan Bullard. That's one kid that kind of disappointed me last year. I had a higher expectation of him last year, but hopefully, like Jose said, he takes the next step and he becomes the pass rusher slash, you know, run defender that we saw at Florida. So that leaves, you know, one more position. And there's a kid that John Jenkins is a veteran, but they also signed Capron Lewis Moore from off of Baltimore's roster. There's another guy from used to be a Notre Dame football player. So that's a guy I want to see how he does in training camp. And then Rashad Coward, an undrafted free agent out of, I think it's Connecticut, is another kid I want to see how he does.
He was out of Old Dominion.
Old Dominion. Thank you.
Yep.
So yeah, but that to me, that's probably the strength of the team as of today.
You know, let's talk about Bullard a little bit more, because coming into the draft 2 years ago, Jose had him very high on his top on his big board. I think in the top five, perhaps, if not five.
Six.
Okay,
that number six. So Danny doesn't know. I am the Jonathan Bullard fan club, so I can give him a pass on his rookie year.
I was a big fan of him coming out of Florida. Well, yeah, I thought they got an absolute steal when they drafted him.
And back in August of 2016, Danny wrote a really nice piece about Jonathan Bullard titled "Notice: Jonathan Bullard is Someone to Notice." And for, you know, 500 words, he just laid on, you know, what he saw during the first two preseason games, how well he was playing and so forth. But then Danny, as a good scout, said, you know, there are certain things that this guy needs to work on. He's got some deficiencies, which is why he dropped to the third round. For example, and I'm reading from Danny's article here, Bullard will need to continue developing as a pass rusher by working on his technique to improve his ability to create pressure on the passer. Other than a bull rush, Bullard has not polished a counter move to use in case his initial rush is thwarted by the offensive lineman. He also displays some hip stiffness as he was unable to quickly bend around blockers, shoot through an opening that would have led him directly to Patriots quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. Instead, Bullard had to slow down to regain control, which allowed not only the opening to disappear, but the blocker to catch up to him and effectively block him out of the way. And I think that those are the things that Fangio saw during the course of the season that he wasn't improving on, and therefore limited his snaps, which is too bad given that it was such a terrible season. I thought Bullard should have got a lot more snaps in that, at least in that last quarter of the season. But I'm with you guys in thinking that this guy has possibilities still.
He also had some mysterious, was it a personal issue? I don't know if it was family related or whatnot. Jose, if you remember, he had to leave the team for a week or two. So I don't know how that played into it, or, you know, as far as
I think I recall hearing something about a family member. I think there was a death in the family, but I you can't quote me on that because I don't remember exactly. But I think I remember looking into it, and there was it seemed like it was something legit, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look into it again. But, you know, the thing with him, you saw a player that had the ability to win with that very quick first step. And I think what we saw with him is something that we see with a lot of college defensive linemen coming into the NFL. They get used to becoming dominant. And if they're dominant with just one trait, let's say his first step, I mean, he won so many battles with just the first step that, I mean, I think you tend to get spoiled and you don't exactly refine your craft and you don't become a technician because you don't really need to be a technician. And this guy was very productive in the SEC by just getting off the ball so fast that he's by his blocker and he doesn't, you know, there are times where he doesn't even need to use his hands because he's already in the backfield. So, you know, these are things that he's going to have to master, but I was encouraged that I saw some video of him working out with, former Gator, former Chicago Bear, Alex Brown. You want to see these guys working hard in the offseason to refine their craft and their technique to get on the field. And so, and I'm hoping that he takes that step forward this year. He has all of the physical ability that you want in a five technique. I think this player is going to be productive. I mean, if I'm wrong on him, I'd be surprised. But I think he has the ability to be special at that position. I look at his physical traits and what he does well. I look at this guy over in with the New York Jets, who was very productive, but he's a head case in Sheldon Richardson, who's to me has a similar skill set, and he was dominant up until he started having these off the field issues, and it seems like he just went off the rails when the team became a bad team. But you don't really have those questions with Bullard, and I can see him taking a big leap this year.
Richardson, Brandon Marshall's a big advocate for Richardson there.
I was just going to say, Richardson will be fine this year now that Brandon Marshall is off the team.
15 reasons why, right? Better luck.
I would love to know more about that whole thing.
Yep.
It seems like every year, too, for Brandon Marshall, something happens.
It's going to make a
good book. Yeah, but that locker room was a mess. I mean, what locker room have you – I mean, have you ever heard of a quarterback getting the shit kicked out of him? Like Geno Smith got his jaw broken by some linebacker.
Right, yeah,
you got to pay your debts, man.
Jeez, I could think of a half dozen Bears quarterbacks I would have liked to have seen get their ass kicked.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. For all the shit you heard about Cutler over the years that the reporters wanted to put out there, nobody ever tried to beat his ass.
Really. All right, let's talk about another position group, and Danny mentioned it earlier. Another position group I'm really high on is the tight end position. There is a mixture here of players that can fit almost any scheme. If Dowell Loggins can come up with some effective schemes, I think he's got the tight ends to plug and play on just about anything. I think I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 six guys. The only guy,
you keep saying scheme and dialogue. Is funny.
Yeah, that's like an oxymoron, right? Ben Bronecker, the kid from Harvard, is the only guy that I'm not super impressed with. I saw him. I was out at camp three times and kind of kept an eye on him to see what he was about. And he didn't play in one and a couple, you know, there was nothing to write home about. And, of course, he didn't see much action. He saw some late in the season. So we'll see what he looks like in camp this year. But aside from that, everyone else on this team, I was up at the Vikings camp for 2 days, and I was super impressed with Mecole Pruitt, the 6'2", 258-pound, 25-year-old from Southern Illinois, and saw him play at SIU one game. I think this guy could be a find too. Plus, you've got the second round pick, Adam Shaheen. You've got the big free agent signing in Deion Sims. Daniel Brown showed some stuff late in the season. So I think this is a good worth watching.
Daniel Brown's my guy.
I think he's going to make the team. I really do.
Well, that's the guy they plucked off the Ravens roster last year. And what he brings is he brings size. I think he's 6'5". He's a former receiver, converted to tight end. He's not a inline Y tight end. He's not going to line up and block anybody, but he's more of a joker where he can line up to the outside and slot, even split out Y as a receiver. And like we mentioned before, the receiving core now doesn't have that Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall guy to go up and get it. Daniel Brown will give him that option. I think that's where he's going to play a role on this team. I don't see him as a starter, not right now, not this year. I think that's going to go to Deion Sims. And I do expect them to do a lot of 2 and 3 tight end sets, emphasize the running game this season. So I think they'll utilize Brown in that role where you're in the goal line, he's the kind of you go up and get a guy.
What do you think, Jose? Are you as high on the tight end group as I am?
I think it's solid. It has potential. I'm not high on it like you are, but I'm just curious who they're going to end up keeping here, because I mean, you're probably only going to keep 3. And obviously you're keeping Deion Sims. You're keeping Adam Shaheen. And right. So Zach Miller is obviously has been a productive player, but he can't stay healthy. Does he end up pushing one of these talented players in Daniel Brown or Mecole Pruitt off the roster? I mean,
he's a goner.
That was my guy. That was my guy. Zach Miller, we were discussing earlier, is as far as any sort of surprises. And I don't mean to jump ahead, but that, no, I don't think Zach Miller makes a team.
Tell us why.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry, Danny. Tell us why you think he's going to be released.
I think, he makes close to $5.5 million this year. So once they cut him, I think they get that cap savings.
It's actually, sorry for interrupting. It's actually a $1.8125 million, almost $2 million in cap savings if they trade or release him this year, according to spotrack.com.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Because I think Daniel Brown does offer a lot of what Zach Miller does. When Zach Miller went down, you did see Daniel Brown utilized in that way at some points. He had that athleticism where you could split him out in the slot, and he was a mismatch for safeties or linebackers. So I'd like to see him stick on the roster. But Mecole Pruitt, I mean, I can't dismiss him either. That's going to be a fun battle to watch between those two.
Yep.
The player that I'm not excited about is the player that they spent all this money on in Deion Sims. He's the one I'm least excited about. I mean, Shaheen, you see all of those traits, and you know, you hope that you can harness all of that potential and he can become something similar to a Rob Gronkowski and being that giant mismatch, and he becomes a dominant blocker with that frame. But the two that I'm excited about really are Daniel Brown and Mecole Pruitt. That battle for that final tight end spot, assuming that Zach Miller's cut, and you know, if they're saving money on the cap, then you have to assume that that's a very, very strong possibility. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be very intrigued to watch that battle during the preseason. But this is an athletic group, and you really do have the potential to create a lot of mismatches with them.
Right. And I'm a big Zach Miller fan, but the only thing is the guy never can stay healthy. He has yet to play a full NFL season. So I think it's, you know, with the young guys they have right now, you know, with the Brown, the Shaheens, and the Sims, I think that's going to force him off the roster. The one thing is I can see them keeping 4 tight ends if they do not keep a fullback. But I think they're going to keep a fullback. whether it's Freddie Stevenson, the rookie, or Michael Burton, the guy they just picked up from off of Detroit.
He's an excellent run blocker.
So if they keep a fullback, yeah, I think they'll keep only three tight ends. So then, yeah, it'll come down to Brown or you know, Pruitt and those guys for that third spot, I believe.
Tell you what, if they keep a fullback like they did last season for that ridiculously low number of snaps that they actually used a fullback,
yeah,
I'm going to be pissed that they wasted a roster spot. Because, it was just ridiculous that they kept one last year when they never played him. I mean, the guy got in like one or two snaps here and there, and then they'd cut him, and then they'd bring him back, and fucking you got the second leading rusher. Yeah, but it doesn't make any damn sense because – I mean, you got the second leading rusher in the NFL, and you probably should be utilizing a fullback here and there. But no, let's go empty and let's throw it 49 times. That doesn't make any damn sense. Different show.
But no, but it's a really good point. And the thing is that I think, and you guys know the game better than I do. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think Jordan Howard could really benefit from a great blocking fullback, and Michael Burton is that. This guy, you know, Pro Football Focus gave him high grades. I followed a lot of Detroit Lions football. This guy is a really good blocking fullback, and
he's a giant.
And if you're going to keep a guy like that, then definitely he should be on the football field for 15. A running place, you know, that to me just it makes sense. If you're looking at the strength of this football team, it's talented at the tight end position. It's talented in the middle of the offensive line. You've got a talented running back who can push piles, and now you've acquired a talented run blocking fullback. Jesus,
you really should be punching. Well,
let's
people
throw
in the mouth,
ball. Let's throw the ball 50
times. But he
tries
to outthink them. He outthinks himself.
Yeah, really. Those little guys, you know?
Yep.
All right. I really do think
that there might – I think they're going to go a lot of power this year. And I hope, I should say, they go a lot of power. I mean, they don't have the receiving talent, you know, at the receiver position to go four or five receivers, you know, and attack downfield. Yeah. I think they're going to get a lot of 2-3 tight end sets, a fullback, and just pound Jordan Howard up the middle. But –
Josh Bellamy losing the Titans game didn't stop him from chucking the pill.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the guy's just, I mean, he just doesn't seem to have any idea on how to scheme and strategize, and he doesn't even seem to have a feel for play calling. But let's hope he learned from all of his many mistakes last season.
That's one thing I'm surprised. They didn't even bring in like a offensive consultant or someone like that to help him, you know? And so I assume with, you know, Fox, with all of his connections and on the league, he'd bring in some, you know, offensive coordinator who's out of football right now, just to be in as an offensive consultant, someone like that, like a North Turner or someone like that would come in and just kind of help guide Dowell. But
they're probably afraid to clip his nuts. They didn't want an established veteran coach coming in here to use Dowell as an ottoman.
You know, I think they love him. I think that they love Dal Loggins. And you heard Jay Cutler in his first interview after he left how highly he spoke about Dal Loggins. He's a future head coach in the league. I think that there's, you know, and I do think that Loggins has a lot of talent at what he does. It's just when he gets into play calling a game, it all goes to ruins because he doesn't stick with the initial plan. He, you know, at the sight of panicking, he just starts throwing the ball too often as opposed to sticking with the run game. And I'm also concerned of the fact that it took him so long to realize that Jordan Howard is really the better running back of the group that they had last year. I mean, that was pretty damn obvious very early in the season. Even in preseason, you could see that this Jordan Howard has some special talent. So it bothers me a little bit that Loggins didn't recognize that earlier.
Yeah, even in Bourbonnais, you could see Howard had, you know, for a bigger guy, he had more explosiveness through the hole than Langford did. Mm-hmm. So it's just something like that. It took him, what, 4 or 5 games and 2 injuries for both Carey and Langford to get hurt before they gave Howard an opportunity, which is kind of disconcerting.
That was the key of the injuries, yep. All right, I did ask you guys to present a player tonight that you had some expectations for one way or another. It's out of the bag already that we know that Danny thinks that Zach Miller is a prime candidate to be cut. Am I explaining that correctly, Danny?
Yeah, and I have another one for you. Since I already gave you Zach Miller, I have another veteran that I think has a chance of getting cut, and that's safety Adrian Amos. So he's he's been a starter the last couple of seasons, and he just hasn't made that many plays on the ball. And you know, we've discussed the safety position already. You know, with Demps, you know, being signed as a free agent, I'm assuming he's gonna start. You know, they used draft picks last year on Bush and Hall, who's been converted over to safety this year. Eddie Jackson, another draft pick this year, and a kid I'm very high on. And Jose, I'm curious what you thought of this kid coming out last year was DeAndre Houston Carson. I was really high of this kid coming out of William & Mary, and I just wish, I mean, they gave him a bit more of an opportunity. A, he's phenomenal on special teams, and then B, he's you know, his tape was, you know, he showed the range, he showed the instincts. As a kid, I'm interested in seeing as well. So I think Adrian Amos is a guy that may not make the team.
To answer your question, Danny, with DeAndre Houston Carson, I'm with you in that I felt they should have given him an opportunity last year. In your little scenario there, you cut Chris Pozinski, and we know that that's impossible. That would never happen.
Pozinski's gone, and so is Harold Jones-Korte.
Pozinski will never. If Pozinski's gone, Vic Fangio's going to resign. You print that now, Aldo. Print that.
I print it. I'm typing it so, right now.
I wasn't high on Houston Carson, though, coming out of William & Mary. I felt like he was greatly aided by the competition that he played against. You know, he looked athletic on tape, but to me, the big turnoff for me was I kind of picked up on the type of personality that he was because he seemed kind of brash. He just came off like fake tough guy. He had no physicality. And the tapes that I watched, and it's not like I sat there and watched 10 games of this guy who was, you know, projected a late round pick, but I watched some tape on him and was not impressed. I was impressed that he did make plays on the football, and when he did, he had some return ability, and he seemed athletic for that level of competition. But I felt that, you know, he had the hips and he had some of the movement I wanted to see where I questioned whether or not they were playing him at the right position because of the lack of physicality. Just like a guy that we discussed this year, you and I, Evans from Texas A&M, that had the movement skills to be a cornerback possibly and just didn't have the physicality to play the safety position, but that's where he's been played. So I felt the same way about Houston Carson. But, you know, a lot of the same was said about Adrian Amos, that he didn't have the physicality. And that's the one thing that he has shown in the NFL is that he is willing to come up and hit you. He just hasn't made plays on the football. So I wouldn't be completely shocked if they cut Amos, honestly. I don't think that's a complete shocker with what we've seen out of him. But he does have the ability to – he does have some versatility and can, you know, play the slot and does have some special teams ability too. So that's going to help his case. But this is going to be an interesting group, definitely.
Right, and I remember how we were talking about Josh Bellamy and losing that position and for special teams. DeAndre Houston Carson had 9 block kicks in college, so that's a guy that might be able to step up and fill that role possibly as a gunner if they do cut Bellamy. The rookie that I think, I'm not sure if he's going to make the roster, but I think he's got a very solid chance to making the practice squad, is undrafted free agent Isaiah Irving out of San Jose State. Hmm. He's 6'3", 255 pounds. He was used as a, you know, outside linebacker, defensive end in college. He rushed from a two-point stance to 30-point stance. He, like I said, 6'3", 255, 36-inch vertical, 4'8", 140, had 7 sacks last year and 11 tackles for loss. So he's a kid that, you know, has a chance to probably unseat a guy like Christian Jones or someone like that where he can come in and you know, make the team on special teams, basically, if he makes it opening day roster. If not, like I said, he's probably going to be a prime candidate for the practice squad. So that's one undrafted free agent that I'm going to be viewing or have my eye on in training camp.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned him because I actually watched some of his tape today. And I took a look at the kid from Minnesota that they picked up, Hendrick Egbe. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get somewhat of an idea of what they were looking for, you know, at that position and the guys that they picked up off the street. Because I felt like I don't know that they contacted this player or not, but Houston ended up picking up Joe Mathis, who I was really high on as an undrafted free agent out of Washington. And I felt like, you know, that's a player that would have had a shot to make this roster. A player that's physical on the outside can set the edge. So I wanted to see what these players had that intrigued the Bears and what made them bring them in. So with Irving, I did see a player that could set the edge with physicality. I didn't see a player that was an outstanding pass rusher, but although I watched limited tape, I saw a lot of stiffness in his movement. And I didn't see a player that had a great motor, but he does have size and strength. Yeah, he was utilized a bit differently, but you saw some of what you want to see with your 3-4 outside linebackers in terms of him setting the edge in the run game and being gap disciplined and playing within the scheme. So, and the kid from Minnesota, I honestly didn't see much. I got to watch one game and I didn't see anything overly impressive. This is a player that's a little taller. He's kind of high cut. I saw him get cut blocked a couple of times. He doesn't seem to have great football awareness. But he does have an intriguing build. You know, you got that similar build to Leonard Floyd where he's taller and leaner and has some athleticism. So, I mean, we'll see. These are players that probably won't get a large number of snaps. But I'll take a closer look at that particular player now that you're mentioning him, Danny, because I wasn't overly impressed. But if you've seen more of him than I have, then I'll definitely take a deeper look.
Yeah, he only had 7 sacks was his career high, and that was last year. So he's still developing. But I see more of like a situational pass rush. I initially thought I saw maybe playing some inside linebacker, but at 255, I think he's too big for that position. I think he's not fast enough. But I will see. I mean, it's just someone that caught my eye, and I'm like, this guy is a little intriguing. And I think Joe Mathis. The only thing we know about Ryan Pace is he likes the athletes and you like size, and Mathis, I believe, is only 5'11".
Yeah, but I mean, like that bugs me because when you watch his tape, I mean, does it not feel like you're watching? We're just watching him against the run. I mean, let's say they're running an outside zone in his direction. It's like watching Pernell McPhee because he's taking his
something like that.
Right, I mean, he's controlling his blocker. He's setting the – I mean, he's fucking ferocious on the outside. He sets the edge. I mean, he punishes the blocker, which is – I mean, there's – obviously, that's probably why he got hurt because he plays with his hair on fire. I mean, he's always pursuing the football, and he does have that upside as a pass rusher. I mean, I felt like he was a very good pass rusher. I don't understand how he went completely undrafted, but
go ahead.
The whole height thing, I mean, if the guy can play football, exactly. Give the damn guy a shot. I mean,
exactly.
You drafted Tariq Cohen.
That's right. watching that Washington tape, you're trying to keep your eye on, like, say, Buda Baker and Mathis at the same time is impossible because these guys are just like maniacs on the football field. And I was like, man, both guys really impressed me. But again, both guys are undersized, so we'll see. I mean, I like Mathis, you know, especially I believe he went undrafted. So
yeah, he did.
Bring him in as an undrafted free agent. I would not mind taking a shot on that. But
no, so Houston signed him. So I was just wondering if Chicago had attempted to bring the player in. It's just I was just kind of puzzling that they gave roster spots to players that I saw as lesser players. But hey,
Jose, who do you?
I'm no GM.
And also, I'm not a special teams guy, but the kicker out of Utah, Andy Phillips.
Yeah.
I think he may give. Our kicker, a little run for his money there.
Totally agree.
He's older than Dow Loggins.
And a lot
he
taller.
Is 28 years old. Yes, he is 28 years old. But he made 84 field goals in his career at Utah, which is third, I believe, in a Pac-12 all time. So, I don't know if Foxy will be comfortable going with a rookie kicker. We know he has a one spot in his heart for our Mr. Connor Barth, but that'd be another competition, something we look forward to. That's one thing this year. That's one thing this year is training camp and preseason games are going to be interesting to watch because there's going to be competition, I feel like, up and down the roster.
Absolutely. Yeah, and by the way, Fox needs all the excuses he can get, so rookie kicker might be a reason why he would want to keep him. Jose,
Barth got beat out by a rookie kicker last year in New Orleans. I wanted to see them bring in competition for Pat O'Donnell. I mean, yeah. I feel like Barth was horrible. I mean, he had his first two games, he was shaky, but I mean, after that, he was solid.
He was fine, yeah. Yeah.
That shit he kicked in New York, I mean, the win was just I mean, it was swirling that day, and he hit a couple of kicks in that game, if I recall correctly. I think he might have missed an extra point, but so did Robbie Gould.
I know, yep, Gould missed one too, yep.
I know you posted some pictures. You were pretty well bundled up at that game.
Yeah.
All right, Jose, give us the players that you think could surprise or disappoint, who's going to get cut, anyone on your list there.
So a player that I think most Bears fans have already cut, Lamar Houston. I think it would be a surprise if he makes this roster, but I don't think you can count him out just because he has that pass rush ability, and you didn't really address that position in the draft. You need players that can get after the quarterback. And can you count on Pernell McPhee to be there for 16 games? You know, I mean, I understand he's coming off injury as well, but having this veteran pass rusher on the roster is a positive. I don't know that he's 100% lock, but I don't think we can sit there and count him out. You know, but bringing in Dan Skuda is something that makes me not say that I'm 100% confident that they'll keep Lamar Houston, just because Skuda offers versatility and he's familiar with the scheme. He can play special teams, and you know, he's one of those Vic Fangio type guys. That's the one player that gives me some pause in saying that I think Lamar Houston absolutely makes this team.
It's interesting you said Skuda challenges Houston. See, when I heard Skuda signed, I thought automatically Sam Acho was gone. They brought him back for another year, so I think that might come down to between Acho and Skuda for that position.
Yeah, I understand. I thought the same thing. I thought that Acho was gone. I know they brought him back too, but I mean, really, you're probably going to keep four. What do you think, four or five?
Five,
Danny.
Well, it all depends on McPhee's knees. I know he's lost weight. He looks good so far. Reports he looks good in OTAs, but I mean, you know, you're going to have Willie Young, Floyd, McPhee, and Houston. And yeah, I mean, if they move Robert Harrison out to outside linebacker, that's another guy that's going to have to compete for that position. So we'll have to see where he's playing in training camp. So that could be another young guy that they might mm-hmm. want to develop. Obviously, they like him, and they kept him, you know, throughout the last season. So
I was just going to say, what are the cap ramifications of cutting Pernell McPhee? Not that I think that's going to happen, but I think there could be a surprise cut out of this particular position group.
$6 million savings.
Savings. Yep. How about Willie Young? I don't think they should, but just
no. Young signed wondering. That extension. He's
yeah. Last year he signed an extension,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But how's that structured? What are the ramifications?
I'll tell you in a second. My computer, for some reason, is acting slowly.
There's three veterans in that group, and I don't know that there could be a surprise cut there. It all hinges on how these, you know, if Robertson Harris moves outside, I mean, how he plays.
Right, right. I think Houston is the most logical one to go. I think, you know, two ACL cut. Injuries. Yeah, two ACL injuries. And he really is not, I don't think he's a really great fit for this defense. But, you know.
You know, when he initially came in, when Vic Fangio initially came in, I mean, I was clamoring for Lamar Houston to move over to 5-tech. And really all you had was Ratliff at that point in terms of an established defensive lineman when he came in. I could not understand why they moved him to outside linebacker. But
right.
That's all water under the bridge now. That's all done.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like I said, up and down the roster, there's going to be competition, and we'll be curious to see, you know, what happens, who makes it, who doesn't make it. So, but yeah, I think that outside linebacker position, another area, which is one of the areas where I thought they were going to, you know, address in the draft, which is another area that they shockingly didn't even look at. So.
So in his third season, Aldo, is Jeremy Langford a surprise cut if he doesn't make this football team?
Oh, good question. And
he's very, he has an uphill battle for sure.
He's a surprise cut because he's a Ryan Pace pick.
Yeah, I mean, who do you think is going to make a roster? Because I thought of Langford, but who do you think is going to make the roster ahead of him? Benny Cunningham?
I would say Benny Cunningham. I mean,
If Howard goes down, are you confident in Kadeem Carey or Benny Cunningham carrying the load for you?
No.
I'm more confident in them carrying the load than Jeremy Langford.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want a running back that I sneeze at and he fucking goes down. You know, I can't watch that. Now, Cunningham has some ability. I think he's a player that has really been overlooked because Los Angeles drafted Todd Gurley. But he's a player that when he has seen the field, he's been productive.
And a good special.
He's a player that sparks your offense.
And this is why to Cohen, I know what they want to do with Cohen, but to use a fourth-round pick on a running back that is probably going to be more used in the passing game than you know, carries, and to use a roster spot for running back like him, that's kind of still has me scratching my head. But yeah, I mean, if you look at it right now,
returner.
I think if Howard goes down and you have to turn to Kadeem Carey or Brennan Cunningham, I think you're in trouble.
So you'd prefer to go with Jeremy Langford
over either Kadeem Carey or Cunningham? Yes.
Yes. Oof. Yeah, I couldn't. We disagree there, but
I know he hasn't inspired confidence, and it's not like, you know, but just in terms of, you know, productivity, a guy who can run the ball and catch it out of the backfield, I think I'd prefer Langford over those two guys.
Yeah, I just feel like I could rely on Benny Cunningham more than I could on Jeremy Langford. I mean, Langford doesn't run with that physical nature that you want. He doesn't have great vision, and he has too many drops in the passing game. So I just, and as a in pass protection, he's just average. And he may even be below average. He's not really good there either.
By the way, Willie Young's contract makes him ineligible to be cut. There's a dead cap of $5 million. So I think
that's good. That's good, because then they can't fuck that up.
Right. But they do have a potential out for 2018, so they would just have to there would be less than $1 million. So he'll be a Bear in 2017. Unlikely he'll be a Bear in 2018. And, boy, I'm surprised, Jose, that you're saying that Jeremy Langford would be an inferior choice to the other guys. I just don't see that. I still think that I totally agree with you. You don't want a running back who goes down when you sneeze on him. But at the other point, you know, there's no depth on this running back department of the team, that if Howard goes down, you really don't have anyone else who can assume 15 to 20 carries. I just don't see it.
I think a combination of Kadeem Carey and Benny Cunningham or Tariq Cohen offers more. I mean, you're going to split the snaps. I mean, you're not going to give them 30 touches like you're going to do with Jordan Howard, but you can mix and match.
We assume Howard's those players. We assume Howard's getting 3 touches. We don't know
yet. Well, you right. No, you're absolutely right about that. He should get 30 touches, but let's save him for the playoffs.
The 2020 playoffs.
That was one of the more mind-boggling things last year. I couldn't understand why this kid is running over people. Why you're not giving them the ball? But
we're all in.
That's why I'm here, and Dowell's up in the booth making those calls.
Yeah, there was a lot of times where we were saying,
"Are
this.
You crazy? Are you out of your mind?"
Just like,
I'm gonna... Are you out of your mind?
What are you doing, Dowell?
I'm gonna take a crazy shot in the dark at a surprise cut.
Okay, go ahead.
Crazy one, Bobby Massey.
Oh no way.
Starts playing like dog shit.
You know what? That's not out of the question. That's not out of the question. Now, the only thing is, who are you going to replace him with?
Exactly.
You know?
I mean,
because you're already moving Kyle Long to left guard. You're moving Sitton to right guard. You got Whitehair at center.
Compton would be your starting right tackle.
Ooh, man, I don't know if I want to go into season. And I'm not saying by Massey's all world right tackle, but man, he did improve as the season went on. But man, I'd be scared of going with Tom Compton as my starting right tackle.
That dude forgets how to play football every offseason. It's fucking mind boggling.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I mean,
game eight. It's like, oh yeah, this is how I do it.
Right. Yeah, he got progressively better as the season went on. But yeah, those first, I don't know, 6-7 games, it looks like a rookie just out of a Division II school trying to play right tackle in the NFL.
It did, or worse.
He's notorious.
Somebody grabbed him by the face mask and said, "Hey, you're supposed to get in front of the guy," and it all clicked.
This is why going into next season's draft, I feel like the Bears' biggest needs are going to be offensive tackle. Remember, because you know we already talked about Massey, but Charles Leno's entering his final season.
Yeah, contract year. Right?
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about
solid. He's a solid tackle, left tackle, but he's not like some guy I'm going to, you know, give big money, big guarantee money, and long term contract to. So, left tackle, I still believe receiver and safety are going to be positions that they're going to be looking at heavily next year going into the draft.
Well, and Matthew Balsley sends us a Twitter question asking that very same thing. Expectations for Charles Leno. He's only 25 with good feet, needs to put it together. What would you like to see out of him this year? Improvements. And
just more consistency.
More consistency, especially in the run game, because that is where he mysteriously is at his worst, which I expected he would be at his best. At pass blocking, he's not going to make the all-pro team, but with the Bears getting rid of the ball quickly and with his skills, he's passable there. But it's at run blocking that he is really bad.
Right. Right, and that's the thing. Athletically, he has the feet. He's got the athletic ability, the movement skills to be able to. He's got the long arms to be able to suffice or to stand up. You know, get in the way of the rushing. You know, defensive lineman. But real run blocking, he just doesn't have any power at the point of attack. So,
There has to be an improvement this year. And I know he's only 25, but if he doesn't improve this year, then yes. And next year's draft, a very high draft pick has to be devoted to that position because enough is enough there. All right, there's a couple of other questions, but Jose, you're not done with your players, right?
No, I'm done. I mean, I'm sure we're going to beat this roster to hell in the next couple of months.
So. You ain't kidding. All right, Midway Monster asked the question, what do we do if Glennon, if he gets 7+ wins this year, do you keep him and try to trade Trubisky or vice versa? And what would the trade value be? Well, I think that's a pretty simple question, but let me throw it to Danny.
Well, if Glennon gets you 7 victories and he's supposed to be a competent quarterback, it all depends on how the coaching staff feels the development of Trubisky has progressed. If they feel like Trubisky is ready to take over as a starter next year, you put Glennon up on the block and you get yourself either a second-round pick or the best you can, probably a second-round pick, third-round pick, because there's going to be teams that are going to need quarterbacks. And if Glennon – this is why I think this could turn out to be one of the better moves that Ryan Pace did. It was signing Glennon and drafting Trubisky, because if it works out, if Trubisky turns into the quarterback he thinks he is and Glennon becomes a serviceable starter and starting NFL quarterback, you will reap back some of that draft capital you lost in trading up for Trubisky. So you go get a second-round pick, maybe a third-round pick, and you trade – Glennon. But it all depends on the progress they feel Trubisky is making in developing as a backup.
Well, part of his question was, do you trade Trubisky? I mean, they're not trading Trubisky.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
That's completely out of question.
Right.
What is Mike Glennon's contract next year?
I think he only has $2.5 million guaranteed, I believe.
That's correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's correct.
2.5 if he is on the roster, or 2.5 you cut him?
If you cut him.
Okay, you're not cutting him. I mean, you're not cutting him.
No.
So, I mean, you're listening to phone calls. Because if he's productive, there will be teams calling. I don't know that you're going to net the second-round pick. I mean, you can hope that a team loses a quarterback via injury, or a team like the New York Jets decides that they'll give you a second-round pick. But you're taking phone calls. But I mean, at worst, he's you have a competition with Trubisky and Glennon, and it doesn't kill you to carry his salary on the books next year. Right. And if he again, let's say, starts a handful of games and then Trubisky comes in and he was still productive and it's just that the coaching staff wants to get their guy in there, then you still have the ability to trade him. So I think ideally Glennon is productive this year and you're just trying to gain some sort of capital for him. I mean,
right. That's the thing. And the funny you mentioned the Jets, because that's the first team I thought of. Is because the Jets and Buffalo were reportedly interested in Glennon as well, besides the Bears. And, say the Jets have a crappy season, they have that second or third pick, and they have same questions about, Sam Darnold or some of the other quarterbacks that are coming out in next year's draft. Yeah, you get a guy like Glennon for a second round pick, and you go get yourself your stud, you know, defender or whatever the position is going to be that's going to be at the top of the draft. I think that, you know, or you know, a team like Buffalo, Tyrod Taylor, you know, I know they re-signed them, but I don't think, you know, and you and I think both agree, Nate Peterman, I don't think is the future for Buffalo there as well. Oh, so,
geez.
Yeah, so I mean, it seems like that if Glennon is productive and he shows that he's a competent starting NFL quarterback, I think teams will be ringing the you know, Ryan Pace's phone off the hook to try and get Glennon.
Especially now, I'm looking at the contract now. He is a hell of a lot cheaper via trade than if you were to have signed him on the open market like the Texans did with Brock Osweiler. Yeah. You're looking at $12.5 million in 2018 and $12 million in terms of his base salary in 2019. That's if he is a productive NFL starting quarterback, that's a bargain.
Absolutely.
That's wicked cheap.
Absolutely. All right. Midway Monster also has another question. He wants to know, who do we see as our starting five offensive linemen and at what positions? I want to take a crack at this one because I'm not going to predict who the five starting offensive linemen are, but I would love to see Cody Whitehair get a good look at left tackle during camp and into training camp. He doesn't have the body for an NFL left tackle, but inarguably he played the position very well in college. And so stranger things have happened. He could potentially be as good or better than Charles Leno at left tackle. If that were to happen, then Hironas Garasu, if he lives up to his potential of a third-round draft pick, and we saw some improvement. I think, Danny, you will agree with me. At training camp, Garasu looked pretty good at center in those few snaps before he got injured. So if you got Garasu at center, Cody Whitehair at left tackle, and at right tackle, hopefully Bobby Massey can play at the beginning of the season like he played at the middle and late in the season, then all of a sudden the offensive line starts looking like one of the better offensive lines in the NFC with Kyle Long, Josh Sitton, and Garasu in the middle, Bobby Massey and Cody Whitehair at the tackle positions. That's something I'm...
You're benching Charles Leno?
I am benching Charles Leno only
and
if...
And Bobby Massey's playing?
Well, we know that Charles Leno can't play right tackle.
Yo, wait, how many of those Maximus IPAs did you put away before you...
enough to be slurring my words as I talk.
Yeah, Bobby Massey's the fucking greatest of all time. Charles Leno play that tackle.
I like Bobby much more than you guys do. I know
that. I know you do. You almost had a stroke arguing with Phil about him last year during one of the podcasts.
I had a temper tantrum, yeah. All right, so what do you guys think about the offensive line? Do you want to predict what the starting five will be, or just give your general thoughts?
Do you want to go first? I don't like your offensive line. Yeah, I'll go first. So I'm fucking cutting Bobby Massey because I'm sick and tired of all those shit.
No, so I like
Charles Leno is my starting left tackle because, I mean, although... And just to go back to Bosley's question about where he can improve, obviously in the run game, but another area that I'd like to see him improve with him being an athletic player is getting out in space and actually finishing his blocks. Because a lot of times he's getting out in space, he's not blocking anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, corners are eluding him or linebackers are eluding him. And he really should be burying those smaller players when he gets out there with him being athletic. So I'm going to keep Charles Leno at left tackle. I'm going to bank on him having a big year with him being in a contract year. And with some of the money that these tackles got on the open market this last offseason, you know, players that weren't necessarily huge names, like Wagner from Baltimore, the Lions,
Ricky Wagner.
Riley Reiff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ricky Wagner. And then Riley Reiff went to Minnesota.
Right. And Kieran is... Carolina's happy they got Matt Khalil, the guy who
Carolina signed Matt Khalil to how much money? So Charles Leno could be coming into big money next year. You know, we look at him and we see an average player, but apparently an average left tackle is worth a hell of a lot of money in today's NFL because there just aren't that many of them out there. So I'm going to bank on him playing well. I'm going to get Eric Cush into this starting lineup because really? He was very solid.
He was.
You know, Eric Cush is coming in here. He's going to play left guard. Josh Sitton is moving to right guard. That's already been discussed. Cody Whitehair is my starting center. And Kyle Long is my right tackle. This is my offensive line. Now, my swing tackle is a player that they're discussing as a guard. But when I watched him, I felt like, you know, you have Tom Compton on the roster as well. But another player that I'm not going to dismiss as a tackle, I'm going to give him an opportunity to play tackle and guard because it only increases his value and decreases the need for roster spots on the offensive line. And that's the kid they drafted in the fifth round, Jordan Morgan. I felt like he had the physical tools to play tackle in the NFL. Now they're discussing him as a guard, and I obviously do think he can play there as well. But I'm going to give him a shot to be a left tackle or a right tackle in the preseason and give him snaps there as well as the interior just because, it increases his value. I'm going to give Eric Cush a starting position because I feel like he earned it when he played last year. I mean, you lost Kyle Long, and you didn't miss a step.
If I'm going with my five, I'm going to go with Leno at left tackle. I've come from the school of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, but apparently they're concerned about Long's shoulder, his right shoulder, the torn labrum. So they're moving him over to a left side. He's a natural left-handed player. So I'm thinking they're going to have Long at left guard. I keep Cody Whitehair at center. He was really, really well. He played really, really well as a rookie and at a very tough position. You know, a lot of people take center for granted, but there's a lot of responsibilities at center. You know, we have the checks, the calls, and snapping the ball, shotgun, all that stuff. So I keep Whitehair at center, obviously sitting at right guard, and I keep Massey at right tackle. I do like Eric Cush, but I like him on my bench better than I do as a starter right now, especially if you have Sin and Long playing a guard. I think that interior is going to be the strength of that offensive line. Mm-hmm. And like we've mentioned before with Leno, he's just got to be competent as far as in pass blocking and then improve as a run blocker. And then hopefully Massey, he'll get the early wake up call this year and he'll play consistently throughout the 16 games. And we'll be able to solidify that line. One thing we need to remember is Jay, for all the crap he got, he was a athletic, mobile quarterback who could step up in the pocket, elude pressure, get out, roll out. Guys, Glennon is a statue back there, you know. So the importance of him being able to show some pocket presence will be vital this year if they want any success. So, you know, will he be able to step up in the pocket? So that's why the three interior guys got to create that little room for him to, if he's getting pressure off the edge, he's got to be able to step up in the pocket, find that outlet receiver. So the tackles, I think this year will be vitally important for the Bears. So that's why Massey and Leno, I think, have to be the starters.
I think Mike Glennon's wife is going to be an even bigger fan of Bobby Massey than Aldo because she's going to cash in on a huge life insurance policy when Bobby Massey gets Glennon killed this year.
Yeah, he literally is a statue back there. So if he doesn't improve his pocket presence or be able to show the ability to step up in the pocket and get rid of that ball, he's going to get creamed.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's a statue. He's not as bad as some of the other guys that we've seen in this league. I mean, he does have some escapability. He doesn't have great athletic talent, nowhere near Jay Cutler, but he does have, from what I've seen, he does have pocket presence. He's able to move his feet around in the pocket and avoid those cheap sacks like a lot of the stationary quarterbacks do, but we'll see. I can't wait to get out to camp and take a look. I just want to mention that Sandy Thom, one of our close followers on Twitter, he sent us his starting offensive line, and it's guard heavy with at left tackle, just like me. He's got Cody Whitehair at left guard. He's got Cush at center. He's got Garasu at right guard. He's got Sitton, and then he's got Kyle Long at right tackle, which is an interesting concept. You know, I'm just worried that we're going to lose And I was worried about it the day we drafted him, that Hironas Garasu is going to be a lost guy, a lost third round draft pick. If we don't make room for him at center this year, you know, because the reports are that he doesn't play any other position. So, you know, I'm a little concerned about that, and that Ryan Pace's first draft with the Chicago Bears is starting to look like a disaster. His second draft, and hopefully this draft, much better, but that first draft is not starting to look good, especially if Kevin White doesn't stay healthy. So that's a great way to bookend the show. We started talking about Kevin White and the receivers. We're going to end the show here because we are well over an hour. Holy cow, I got an hour and 40 on my meter, so I'm going to trim some things down and tell you guys. You guys were great today. Great conversation. Great back and forth. Really appreciate it.
Danny, I was awesome. You guys were okay. I was awesome.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that. I was going to say that too, but I didn't want to hurt Danny's feelings.
I had beers with Sandy, and his offensive line is, they've driven on the wrong side of the road over here. Yeah, he's great guy.
He is a great guy. Danny, tell the audience where they can find you on Twitter and anywhere else.
I'm at dshuman56 on Twitter, and like I said earlier, I'm an NFL draft columnist for nfpost.com and a scouting assistant for insidetheleague.com.
Well, for your virgin voyage here on Bears Bar Room Radio, you did a great job, like a whore. You were like a whore.
I forgot. I'm a draft contributor for bearsbarroom.com as
well. That's right, of course. And Jose, you want to let everybody know your Twitter handle and where you can be found on a Saturday night?
Yeah, absolutely. So on Twitter, you can find me at Deuce_Pesos. That's P-E-S-O-S. And on a Saturday night, you can find me at your local titty bar with Mitch Trubisky, because that's what we're about.
Well, is he driving the Camry, or are you driving your car?
No, we're humble. We throw the strippers in the back of the Camry.
Gotcha.
Listen, that's just more singles to throw around.
Gotcha.
I can't wait to get up to Connecticut and hang out with Jose. All right, guys, thank you very much for being on the show. This is Bears Bar Room Radio. I'm Aldo Gandia. Remember, if you drink, please don't drive, and always bear down.